Hello, you're listening to KPPP LPFM. We're broadcasting online through Live 365 and soon to be found on your radio dial at 88.1, adding local color to your airwaves. This is Duke Gomez-Shemp. In the last show, we talked about the thug life, the audacity of being white, and today we're talking about band music. I'm on the tail end of what we call the baby boomers. Throughout my childhood, music was making the mainstream through radio, television, recordings, live performances. And as young people became the consumer scene for music, the older generation became concerned and regulated what could be heard. Many musicians and songs were suppressed and banned by, I don't know, many reasons of the time. You know, I'm not a music historian or a music expert. I'm simply a white guy born in the Midwest in a mine in North Dakota who likes music, and I like music history. In this show, we're going to listen to some band music from 1959 to 1965. We're going to cover other things too, but for today's show, that's the period we're going to take, because that's when I was born, 1959. There were so many band songs throughout my life that you'd be surprised that many of these songs were banned, and you'll have to try to figure out why they were banned. The song you just heard was Rumble. It was by Link Wray and the Raymen. It was recorded in 1959. And it had no lyrics at all. It was just a guitar instrumental. It was called Rumble. And Link Wray was banned by many U.S. radio stations because they feared the title would promote teen violence. Rumble, you know. Despite the boycott, the song would sell over 1 million copies, and Link would follow it with a tune called Jack the Ripper. I'm not going to play that one. But the song you just heard, Rumble, you may recognize that from the movie Pulp Fiction. You know, the song didn't have any lyrics. And you wonder why. Why is a song banned in 1959 that doesn't have any lyrics? And when it's using Pulp Fiction is kind of like, it's talking about darkness, it's talking about drug use, it's talking about violence. The author of the song is actually Native. So it was basically racism that banned this song. We'll see that kind of theme flowing throughout these band songs, especially in the 50s, 60s, all the way up to today. You really have to race it. Another song in 1960 was done by Ray Peterson. It was called Tell Laura I Love Her. Ray Peterson, his song was banned from many radio stations who objected to the death theme of the song. So let's listen to this song and see if we can spot the death theme.
Laura and Tommy were lovers. He wanted to give her everything. Flowers, presents, and most of all, a wedding ring. He saw a sign for a stock car race. $1,000 prize, it read. He couldn't get Laura on the phone. So to her mother, Tommy said,
boom, 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 boom.
Tell Laura I love her.
Boom, 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 boom.
Tell Laura I need her. Tell Laura I may be late. I've something to do. He drove his car to the racing ground. He was the youngest driver there. The crowd roared as they started the race. Round the track they drove at a deadly pace.
Boom, 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 boom.
No one knows what happened that day.
Boom, 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 boom.
How his car overturned in flames. But as they pulled him from the twisted wreck, with his dying breath, they heard him say,
boom, 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 boom.
Tell Laura I love her.
Boom, 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 boom.
Tell Laura I need her. Tell Laura not to cry. My love for her will never die. In the chapel, while Laura prays,
for her Tommy who passed away. It was just for Laura he lived and died. Alone in the chapel she can hear him cry. Tell Laura I love her.
Wow, I never thought that that would result in a song getting banned. You know, the death theme. You know, the guy died, and Tell Laura I Love Her. You know, despite that the record didn't get much airplay, it actually reached number 7 on the national record charts in 1960. You know, on the other side of the Atlantic in England, Decca Records destroyed thousands of copies of the record, claiming it was in bad taste. But a rival record company felt differently and recorded a cover version by a singer named Ricky Valens, which went to number 1 in the British chart. So there you go for banning that. It actually became a big hit. Now we zoom up to 1961. Those British, you know, they were the leaders in the rock revolution. However, they were seemed to be leaders in the banning of songs. In 1961, 100 Pounds of Clay by Gene McDaniels was banned because it had a reference to women being created from building materials, which the network considered blasphemous. So let's listen to the blasphemy. Gene McDaniels, 100 Pounds of Clay.
He took 100 pounds of clay, and then he said, hey, listen, I'm gonna fix this world today, because I know what's missing. Then he rolled his big sleeves up, and a brand new world began. He created a woman and a lots of loving for a man. Whoa, yes he did. With just 100 pounds of clay, he made my life worth living. And I will thank him every day for every kiss you're giving. And I'll thank him every night for the arms that are holding me tight. And he did it all with just 100 pounds of clay. Yes, he did. Oh, yes, he did. Now can't you just see him walking around and round, picking the clay up off the ground, doing just what he should do to make a living dream like you. He rolled his big sleeves up, and a brand new world began. He created a woman and lots of loving for a man. Whoa, yes he did, with just 100 pounds of clay.
Ooh, 100 Pounds of Clay by Gene McDaniels. And it was banned. It was banned because it's blasphemous. You know, that he created woman for lots of love. When you actually look at the album, though, he's a black man. I kind of think that it didn't have to do with the lyrics as much as him as a black person producing music. You know, you check it out. You judge for yourself. 1962. It was a really big year for censorship. You know, I was still quite young and I wasn't paying attention to the music charts as a 3-year-old, but however, a band called The Weavers were making their mark. And after refusing to sign an oath that they would, they had to sign an oath that they have never been members of the Communist Party. And they didn't, you know, and this is in the era of the McCarthy era where, you know, a lot of people in entertainment were being branded as communists and were being blacklisted from actually doing their craft and participating in their profession. The Weavers refused and they were removed from the NBC lineup of the Jack Parr Show. So let's listen to, no, you know what? Actually, at the same time, the Weavers were removed. There was another band that was making hits, and people became very concerned. And they were forbidding people to even dance. It was Chubby Checker, and he came up with a twist. And it was written by Bishop Burke, and it was considered an unchristian song. And, you know, let's listen to this Chubby Checker song and see if you remember. And it was on a popular show, and here we go.
Called The Twist. Ladies and gentlemen, here's Chubby Checker.
Yeah, Chubby Checker. That was on the Dick Clark Show, actually, American Bandstand. And you know, the first thing I noticed, he's black. Does that have anything to do with him being banned? You know, the thing is, the Twist was considered very unchristian, but the Twist went on the only record in rock and roll history to be a number one hit on two separate occasions. The first time in the spring of 1961 and again in 1962, spending an amazing 9 months on U.S. bestseller charts, yet it was banned. You know, British pops up again in this year, and another song they banned was something that they just must have thought was pure evil, but it was around Halloween time, and see if you recognize this one, another banned song from 1962.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld a an eerie sight, for my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. From my laboratory in the castle east to the master bedroom where the vampires feast, the ghouls all came from their humble abode to get a jolt from my electrode.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash. The zombies were having fun. The party had just begun. The guests included Wolfman, Dracula, and his son. The scene was rocking, all were digging the sounds. Igor on chains, backed by his baying hounds. The coffin bangers were about to arrive with their vocal group, the Crypt Kicker Five.
They played the mash.
They played the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They played the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They played the mash.
They played the monster mash. Out from his coffin, Rack's voice did ring. Seemed he was troubled by just one thing. Opened the lid and shook his fist and said,
whatever happened to my Transylvania twist?
It's now the mash.
It's now the monster mash.
The monster mash.
And it's a graveyard smash.
It's now the mash.
It's caught on in a flash.
It's now the mash.
It's now the monster mash. Now everything's cool, Drac's a part of the band, and my monster mash is the hit of the land. For you, the living, this mash was meant to. When you get to my door, tell them Body sent
you. Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
The monster mash.
And you, my graveyard smash.
Then you can mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
Mash cool!
Easy, Igor, you intense
young boy.
Mash cool!
Monster mash cool! Monster mash
cool! Oh yeah, Monster Mash by Bobby Boris Pickett and the Crypt Kickers in 1962. You know, there was a lot of movies of the time of Dracula and Frankenstein and... You know, the reason it was banned, you know, is that, you know, it's really up to the people who are banning it, not even wanting to play it, you know, and because it dealt with death, it dealt with the macabre, it dealt with spirits. I don't know a lot about the artists. I've heard that song a lot. In fact, I tend to hear it when you look at the bebop, all the bebop and stuff of the 60s. It was a really popular song. I never had any idea that it had been banned. The same year, there was another... Another band, Dickie Lee, did a song called Patches. And it was banned by a bunch of U.S. radio stations because it had a suicide theme. You know, it's a song that tells the story of two teenage lovers from different social classes. Uh-oh. You know what that might mean. Whose parents forbid them from seeing each other. The girl drowns herself and the boy sings about joining her. Even though it got a lot of airplay... Oh, wait, it didn't get a lot of airplay, but it reached number 6 on the Billboard chart. Let's listen to Patches by Dickie Lee, 1962.
Down by the river that flows by the coal yards stand wooden houses with shutters torn down. There lives a girl everybody calls Patches, Patches, my darling, of Oceany Town. We planned to marry when June brought the summer. I couldn't wait to make Patches my bride. Now I don't see how that ever can happen. My folks say no, and my heart breaks inside. won't let me love you. Each night I cry as I think of that shanty and pretty patches there watching the door. She doesn't know that I can't come to see her. Patches must think that I love her no more. I hear a neighbor telling my father, he says a girl named Apatches was found floating face down in that dirty old river that flows by the coal yards in Old Shanty Town. Patches, oh, what can I do? I swear I'll always love you. It may not be right, but I'll join you tonight. Patches, I'm coming to you.
That was Dickie Lee in Patches, and that song was banned. You know, I think that song was about interracial relationships. It has to be. This is 1962. And the girl who's on that shanty side of town, got to be a black or a Mexican girl, and she ends up killing herself, and he's going to join her too. That song was banned because they were discouraging any interracial relationships. That's my opinion. You give us your opinion. In fact, you're listening to KPPP FM broadcasting online through live365.com, and soon we're going to be on the airwaves in Fargo-Moorhead at 88.1, adding local color to your airwaves. You know, if you have some comments, you can give us a call at 701-566-0917. Leave us a message. It's a call-in line. Leave a message. It'll be recorded. Give us your name, where you live, and we may play your question or comment on the air. You can also tweet us at @media_PPP. You can also email us at cindy@kppfm.com or duke@kppfm.com. Now we're up to 1963, and some musicians are putting more political music on the scene. And Bob Dylan is someone who did a lot of music back in those days, and he was getting some play on the Ed Sullivan Show. And in February of 1963, he was told that he cannot sing the song Talking John Birch Paranoid Blues. And John Birch Society, of course, a racist supremacist, white supremacist organization, and he was actually pointing at what this means. So let's listen to John Birch, Paranoid Blues by Bob Dylan.
Well, I was feeling low down and blue. I didn't know what in the world I was gonna do. Them communists, they were coming around. They were in the air. They were all over the ground. They wouldn't give me no peace. Well, I run down most hurriedly and joined the John Birch Society. Got me a secret membership card, started walking off down the road. Oh boy, I'm a real John Bircher now. Look out, you commies. Well, we all agree with Hitler's views, although he killed 6 million Jews. It don't matter too much if he was a fascist, at least you can't say he was a communist. That's to say, like, if you got a cold, take a shot of malaria. Well, I was looking everywhere for them Reds. I got up in the morning, looked under my bed, looked in the stove, behind the door, looked in the glove compartment of my car. Couldn't find them. Well, I looked underneath everything, behind the chair, looking for them Reds everywhere. I even looked up my chimney hole, looked out deep inside my toilet bowl. They got away. When I was home alone, I started to sweat. I figured they was inside my TV set. Peek behind the picture frame. Got a shock from my feet right up to my brain. Them Reds caused it. I know they did, them hardcore ones. Well, I quit my job so I could work all alone, and I changed my name to Sherlock Holmes. Following some clues in my detective bag, I discovered there was red stripes on the American flag. Oh, Betsy Ross. Investigated all the books in the library, 90% of those gotta be thrown away. Investigated all the people that I know, 98% of them have gotta go. The other 2% are fellow butchers, just like me. Now Eisenhower, he's a Russian spy, Roosevelt, Lincoln, and a Jefferson guy. To my knowledge, there's just one man that's really a true American. George Lincoln Rockwell. I know for a fact he hates commies because he picketed the movie Exodus. I finally started thinking straight when I run out of things to investigate. Couldn't imagine anything else, so now you find me at home investigating myself. Hope I don't find out nothing. Good God.
Oh yeah, Bob Dylan. You know, I understand, you know, not that I condone or anything, but it's like the Ed Sullivan Show in, you know, 1963, you know, putting political music, you know, basically calling out hypocrisy in the government, you know, and for the, you know, the communist hunt down of all these people. You know, I understand. And they basically said, nope, you can't do it, you know, but he, you know, Dylan went on to keep on recording. So did a lot of other musicians. You know, we're up to 1964, and there was a band called The Kingsmen. And they did a version, not just their song. In fact, we'll find if we actually, especially when we look at white musicians, we look at their music, it didn't come from them. It came from people of color, communities of color. But The Kingsmen did a version of Louie Louie. And it became very controversial because people didn't want to play it on the air because it had indecipherable lyrics. They couldn't understand the lyrics. You know, so therefore, those lyrics had naughty words in them. So the Kingsmen always maintained they never said anything lewd, but radio stations wouldn't play their song because they couldn't understand them. And there must be bad words in there. So let's listen to Louie Louie by the Kingsmen.
Oh,
Louie Louie, the Kingsmen. You know, that song was banned because it was indecipherable lyrics. Well, that's not really true. You know, this song was actually written and performed in a style of a Jamaican ballad. It tells in a simple verse chorus form the first-person story of a Jamaican sailor returning to the island to see his lady love. Louie Louie was a creation of Richard Berry, a Los Angeles sideman, session player, and singer-songwriter. He was inspired by Rene Tauzet's El Loco Cha-Cha and Chuck Berry's Havana Moon. You know, Chuck Berry crafted his immortal three-style verse lament and recorded it with a group called The Pharaohs in 1956. His laid-back version was released in 57 as a B-side of a single and enjoyed moderate success on the Pacific Coast and then promptly sank from sight. The Kingsmen stole the song, basically. You know, and that's not why it was banned, though. You know, actually, there was an addition that was subject to an FBI investigation. It was a supposed but non-existent obscenity of the lyrics. The FBI thought there was obscenity in the lyrics, and they did an investigation and tried to figure out the obscenity inside those lyrics, but they ended up with no prosecution. You know, this is important because we're on radio, and radio is regulated by the FCC, and the FCC regulates obscenity and indecency. And so there's certain words we can't say on the radio. In fact, when we do the show further, as we get closer to today's date, you know, today's time, there's going to be a lot of music that has been banned, but we can't even listen to it. We can't even play it. We can't play it on the radio because the FCC wants to protect children. They want to protect children, so we can't have indecent words on the radio, and we can never have anything obscene. Now, I've actually looked up their policies and their laws, and they don't really, it's hard to tell what the difference is between obscenity and indecency, but there are a certain number of words you can't say, and they'll fine you $320,000 if you say them, so we're not going to say them here. You know, in this same year, 1964, England was, you know, rocking it down with music, and there's a band called The Pretty Things, and they saw their second release of Don't Bring Me Down, and it was a top 10 hit in Britain. And it was banned in America because it had objectionable lyrics. Here's that word objection again, you know. And it said, I met this chick the other day, and then to me she said, I'll stay, I'll get this pad just like a cave, and then we'll have our living maid, and I'll lead her on the ground, my head is spinning around. You know, the several dance halls in UK banned, you know, Dave Clark's Five Bits and Pieces over fears that teen stomping on the ground to the beat would damage the dance floors. So that song was banned. And then Capitol Records released a song called Letter to the Beatles by the Four Preps. The lyrics describe a boy lamenting the fact that he's lost his girlfriend to the Fab Four. You know, this is 1964, you know. On its first day, the record shot to number 85 on the Billboard Hot 100, and it looked like the Preps were going to have another hit on their hands. Unfortunately, they had included a few bars from I Want to Hold Your Hand without permission, and the Preps were threatened with a lawsuit by the Beatles manager Brian Epstein, and Capitol Records was forced to withdraw the single, and employees were enlisted to smash the copies of the single with sledgehammers. So this is more of a corporate ban, you know? So let's listen to the Four Preps and let's listen to the song that was smashed. You know, I think it's amazing when people put this music on YouTube because many of them actually play it with a record player so you can hear the scratchy needle going around. But on this particular song, it actually has a copy of the Capitol record that wasn't smashed by the employees. So here it is, Four Preps, A Letter to the Beatles, 1964.
My girl fell in love with a singing group from England far away. She lost her mind, she lost her heart when they began to play. I wanna hold your hand. And so my girl wrote a letter to the Beatles saying, you're so fine, you can have my love to keep, take this heart. All of my true love, but they wrote a letter.
Four Preps, A Letter to the Beatles, 1964. You know, that song was really about corporate greed, you know, of getting banned, you know, getting destroyed. You know, that copy is probably worth a lot of money if someone has it. But, you know, the whole idea of copyright infringement, you know, the fact is that when we play music on the radio, we have to pay musician union licenses to play music. We have to spend almost $2,000 so we can play pretty much any song that we want to. And supposedly that money is supposed to go to the union where the musicians are part of it, and they're supposed to get royalties from the songs we play. And I know that's not true. It really doesn't trickle down to the musicians or the actual people who wrote the songs, which a lot of people of color wrote songs that are rock and roll that were taken by big bands and people made fortunes. And also, you know, we have a thing called fair use doctrine where we can actually take some copyrighted material, use part of it, and not its entirety, and actually it's legal. But, you know, this is 1964. You know, it's it probably helped pave some of the laws that are in today when it comes to copyright infringement. Well, you know, we're up to 1965. There's a lot of material, and, you know, we're going to do some more segments and put up some more shows because we have a lot of time between 65 and 2015. The next time I'm going to do a show from 1965 to 1970, and things are really going to heat up. Unfortunately, during that time, in the late 60s, there's a lot of songs that can't be played on the radio, so I'm going to have to figure out a creative way to bring you the music and leave the bad words out that will keep us from getting fined. I'm going to take you out with a song that, you know, personally was banned in my household. It was actually banned in, it was banned on radio stations too, but it's called Woolly Bully. It was by Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs, and the song's Woolly Bully. The lyrics are hard to understand. You know, this whole idea that if you can't understand the lyrics, there must be something bad in there. But I think the song is bad because they counted to four in Spanish at the beginning of the song, so anyone speaking Spanish has got to be bad. So I think the song was banned because it made you think of Mexicans. So here it is, Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs, Woolly Bully.